Awake here. Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Awesome. Thanks for joining me, both physically as well as mentally here over the last couple of seconds. My name is Chris Mayo. I'm a software designer with Microsoft. I work on the developer platform evangelism team. And in particular, what I do is I work with our customers and independent software companies to help them design applications for Windows 8. And in particular, I work with them to make sure that they have a great app that has a great Windows 8 experience. So when they go into the store, into the Windows store, their app is incredibly highly rated and has tons and tons of downloads. And the contribution that I make to that process is via the design of the user experience and helping their designers understand Metro, understand what makes a great Windows 8 app, and help them take, you know, what their app is great at and translate that into a great Metro design. And this talk is designing apps with Metro principles and personality. And my goal for this talk is to kind of demystify Metro, right? So you've probably seen, you know, videos on the web or maybe, you know, went to Build or saw some talks at Build that talked about Metro and this new touch content-centric UI that's built into Windows 8. And like me, you probably got really excited about it and then wanted to know, how do I do that, right? I'm excited about that content, that rich content experience. I'm excited about creating mobile touch applications for Metro. But how do I get there, right? And that's the goal of this talk. And let me ask, by a show of hands, how many folks in the room are designers? Okay, a few folks. So for this talk, you'll be able to take what you know about software design, visual design, interaction design, and so on, and you'll learn the principles of Metro so you can apply that to the design of your app. Take those skills that you have and apply them to Windows 8 and to Metro. How many folks are developers? Awesome. So you as a developer, you're probably working with designers to help you create that beautiful user interface, and you want to have like a common language to understand what makes a great Metro app. We'll talk about that during the course of walking through the principles and how to actually implement them. This isn't a coding session, this is a design session. So there's lots of different sessions at Tech Ed that talk about, you know, the individual APIs for implementing some of these scenarios or some of these experiences. This talk is all about orientating you within Metro so you understand what makes a great Metro UI, your user experience. You can go to the other sessions to fill in the story about how do you actually, you know, write the right code in order to make that happen. How many folks are stakeholders, like folks that are responsible for, okay, just a few folks, you know, what the app is and, you know, is the app successful? So you think a lot about, hey, how do I make sure that my app is, you know, downloaded a bunch of times with a really, really high rating? This talk will show you the different aspects of a great Metro design so you can make sure that your app feels like, you know, it's not only unique at what it does and its purpose, but it's also integrated and part of the Windows 8 experience. So let's start off with just a quick analogy or a quick lesson that we learned fairly quickly when we were designing Metro. So this is a drawing that actually a customer did in one of our focus groups. So we brought in a bunch of people when we were thinking about Metro and designing the Metro UI, and we asked them to draw windows. And this is what they drew. And if you look at this drawing, what did they draw? Well, they drew the menu bar, they drew the minimize, maximize, and close button. You know, they drew a scroll bar at the side, they drew like the start button and, you know, application icons and so on. They drew everything about the app except for the app, right? And this is how users think about Windows today. They think about the Chrome or the menu bars and the icons and so on, right? And we started showing them Metro, we showed them the start screen, we let them play around with touch devices, and they started interacting with this content-rich touch experience. And at the end of the day, we asked them to draw a Metro application. And this is what they drew. They drew the content of the app, right? So they drew a box that represents their screen. They drew, you know, the little title up at the top. And then they drew boxes to represent all the tiles of content in their app. right? And this is really a beautiful, powerful thing. Because this is kind of the transition that we as designers or developers are going to make as we move towards Metro, is start thinking about not all the Chrome and the buttons and the scroll bars and so on of our app, but to really focus on the content of the app and the navigation of the app and the experience that the app provides. So this is actually a mental shift that happened for me, right? When I first saw Metro early builds back in July and started working with customers and helping them design their apps, my brain was really here, right? And whether it's coming from like a WPF or Windows Forms or web application or browser application background, you know, my brain was really here, where I was thinking about, you know, tabs and tree controls and scroll bars and so on. And I had to mentally make this shift to think about content, right, and to think about Metro. And back then, there wasn't a lot of design guidance, and there wasn't a lot of information about how to go through that design process. So when I started putting together this talk, what I wanted to get out of this talk for you was for you to walk away, maybe come into the talk thinking about UIs in this respect, and walk out of the talk thinking about UIs in this respect, thinking about them in a Metro way. So that's what we're going to do today. So what is Metro? I tried to put together the most simple definition that I possibly could for what is Metro. Metro is a set of design principles. And they are there. They are not rules, right? They are design principles intended to guide you towards creating a great Windows 8 experience, a great Windows 8 app, right? And these principles are all around, how do I create that great content experience? How do I create that great mobile touch experience? How do I integrate into Windows as a whole so my app, you know, works with all the, you know, Windows contracts for search and for settings and for sharing and so on? And a quick metaphor that I think is helpful and also kind of shed some light on why we call these principles, this set of design principles, Metro. How many folks went through an airport to get here to Tech Ed? So almost everybody, right? And there's one thing that's interesting about, you know, airports or subways and so on, is regardless of where you go in the world, right? I've been traveling to Amsterdam and to Barcelona, various different cities lately. Regardless of where I go in the world and I drop off in an airport, I know how to navigate and I know how to get around, right? Because there's things that are common about airports, right? Not only is the, you know, very clear typography in the fonts and clear iconography to display, you know, whether this is a departure or an arrival or which way I should be headed, right? But also common gestures about how I check in or where I take my bags or how I get through security. So regardless of what city you're in, and each city is unique, right, and provides you a unique experience, that airport itself is unique, you know how to get around. Same thing with the subways. Like, I always take the subway when I get in a different city because I feel like it's easier than driving, all right, and it's easier to navigate than trying to drive around. And the same principles apply, right? I know how to work a subway. The maps, you know, might be different because they're different cities, but generally how they work and so on is the same. And this is really something that we wanted to do with Metro, is that we wanted to provide this set of principles so it was very easy for your app to be unique and exciting and fantastic at what it does, but for it to feel like a Windows 8 app, right? So even though it's unique, it's going to be familiar, and it's going to be easy to learn, and it's going to be easy to use, and it's going to fit in with all the different Windows 8 experiences. Okay? So that's our goal. So what are the Metro design principles? Well, the first is do more with less. Really, really focus on what your app is going to be the best app in the world at, and then take the features and the content and everything you do in that up and focus on that single goal. The second is pride and craftsmanship. Down to the very last pixel, what can you do to arrange the content and structure the content, right, within your application to support that statement that what your app is going to be the best app in the world at, right? And reinforce that in how the app is structured and how that content is presented. Third is be fast and fluid. People are going to be carrying your app around on a slate, right? And they're going to be interacting with it via touch. How do you create a good navigation scheme? And how do you create a good touch experience or design a good touch experience such that whether people are, you know, holding the slate like this or they're holding it, you know, portrait or landscape, or they're lying down on the couch or they're sitting in a chair, or whether it's a 10-inch screen or 11-inch screen or it's a 30-inch touchscreen on the wall, how do you create a great experience that's very, very fast and very, very seamless? So they're immersed in that content and that thing that your app is great at, and the app just kind of floats into the background and immerses them in that thing that they love, the pictures, the news stories, the game, and so on. Fourth is being authentically digital, right? We have pixels on the screen that we're using to do that thing that your app is great at and present that content that your users love. What can we do to make that content and as crisp and clear and concise as possible? And then finally, winning as one. So there are great experiences that are built into Windows 8 as far as sharing information app to app, searching across different applications or Windows in general, where you find settings, how you pick files within the file picker experience. How do I implement those in my app? So my app is just another part of the Windows experience. So when people do a search, they can search just as easily in my app as they can another. If I want to do share, how can I make sure that not only my app is a share source, so I can share with any kind of an app, right? Or I can be a share target resulting in a launch of my app when people want to share something, like a picture or a news story or some, you know, funny quote that they found on the web. Okay? So the rest of the talk, I want to take each one of these design principles and make them real, provide some guidance, provide some resources so you can say, yeah, I know what that principle is, and I believe in that principle as a means of making a great Metro or Windows 8 application, and I have the resources at my disposal that when I get back, you know, to my office, back to my development team, my design team, I can actually design one of these applications, and it's going to be a great application. Okay? So the principle and then the resources behind it to take some action. So first, let's talk about doing more with less. Metro applications are very, very focused on a scenario, right? And usually when I go through a design process with a customer or with a design team or even a development team, me acting as the designer, we focus on a best at statement, right? Metro apps are concise and they're clear as far as their focus or their goal. And we zero in on that goal by completing this sentence. This app is the best app in its category at blank, right? All you guys are going to create awesome Metro apps, great Windows 8 apps. They're going to be highly ranked in the store, and they're going to be downloaded a jillion times, and you're going to get super, super rich, right? That's the easy part. The hard part is figuring out what that app's going to do that makes all those things happen. So usually what we do is we really, really focus on answering this question. What is going to go in that blank? And then we start writing down, you know, features or scenarios or user stories or whatever term you want to use, right, that this app could do. And then we go through each individual feature and say, does this answer the best at statement? Does it support it? If it does, it goes in the app. And if it doesn't, we scratch it off, right? Because we really want to focus on that app doing one thing incredibly well. Once we have that statement and those scenarios, we start thinking about, you know, information design and start thinking about the content that we're going to use to support that statement, right? What content and how can it be arranged and how is it related to each other, right? Because what we want to do within this app is we want to take that content that supports that best at statement and we want to immerse our users in it. I mean, if it's pictures of, you know, your friends and your family, and you want to create the best application at arranging and enjoying pictures, we really want to have the app be every single pixel dedicated to that content, to that thing that people love. Because if you do that well and they love that content, they're going to launch the app, they're going to use the app, they're going to tell their friends, it's going to be highly rated, it's going to be download it a gajillion times, and you're going to be all, be incredibly satisfied and happy that you invested that time. So here's an analogy or a process that we're going to walk through visually to kind of get an idea of what I mean about content before Chrome. So here's an anti-example. What is this? What is this? Yeah, it's a news reader, right? It's an RSS reader. We've all seen apps like this and probably use them every day and so on. Now let's start thinking about the pixels that are on this screen and think about which pixels are dedicated to this, the thing that this app does, reading news or reading an RSS feed. Okay, so I've got a bunch of stuff up here in the title bar as far as being able to search for various things within the feed, and there's a settings button in there where I can configure the application, a refresh button, the ability to add feeds and go from a detail view to a list view. I have this tree control over the side that helps me look at different groups of feeds and organize them, as well as look at items within a particular feed. I have a list of all of the news stories or the items within that RSS feed. And then down here at the bottom, I have the area where the actual individual news story is presented. Now look at this UI and look at that orange box. Let's be generous and say that 30% of the screen is actually dedicated to you being able to consume and enjoy that content. Right? The rest of it is all Chrome around navigation and settings and layout and arranging the content and so on. I mean, that's pretty sad. When I got up in the morning one day and said, I'm going to build the best RSS reader in the world, and when I actually put this thing out for people to start using it, less than 30% of the screen was actually dedicated in that thing that I wanted to accomplish. Let's compare that to an RSS reader designed for Metro. Okay? So when I talk about content for before Chrome, really what I'm talking about is making content to the heart of the experience and taking everything off the screen, dedicating every single pixel as much as humanly possible to that content and really immersing people in that content that they love or that thing that your app is good at. And a lot of times in applications, we talk about solving for discoverability or making things discoverable. And that's actually kind of ironic in the fact that the reason why we have to solve for discoverability is that we've put so much stuff on the screen and arranged it in this, somewhat kludgy way in the fact that we have to think about discoverability. Really, what we should be thinking about is taking things away that distract, right? Really focusing on that content, because we've removed distractions. Things are easy to find. They're easy to discover. They're easy to navigate. So if we immerse people in the content that they love, they're going to discover, they're going to explore. The app's going to be very, very clear in how the content is presented to support that best at statement that you developed to say, hey, this is what my app's going to be. Okay? So here's a weather app. Right? It's pretty clear what this app's goal is. It's to present you with weather data. And every single pixel on this screen is dedicated to the weather. Same thing here is a music app. Right? Every single pixel is dedicated to the artist and for giving you a feel about the music that you're listening to. Back to our RSS reader. And now here's an RSS reader. That same RSS reader, that same function and feature, functionality and features that we saw in that old desktop application designed for Metro. Every single pixel is dedicated to that thing that the app is best at and the content to support it, right? And it's pretty different. Every single pixel on here is about those news stories, okay? And it's compelling. It's beautiful, right? It's content. Great pictures, great titles, inviting me to, read these stories, look at the different categories and so on. But how do I get here? The rest of the talk is going to be making this transition in your thinking and how you design software to this. Okay, so let's kind of dig down into content before Chrome. So where does this Chrome come from, right? Well, traditionally, we've added Chrome to support navigation, to provide that tree control or provide tabs to help me get as much stuff as I possibly can on that screen, right, and help users navigate between different news stories or groups of news stories and so on. It's also been there to support interaction, right? How do I select a story to actually be able to read it? And then layout. How do I structure the app such that I can get all of this stuff on my screen, right, in such a way that people can actually, you know, read that news story? Well, without that Chrome, how do we do those same functions or those same features, right? Well, for navigation, what we're going to do is we're going to actually make the content, we're going to structure the content in such a way that it's very easy to navigate, both from a high level down into a low level of detail. We're going to make the content itself navigable, right? So if I see a news story on that particular recipe on the Pioneer Woman, I can just touch it, and it'll take me to that story. Or if I see the category of the Pioneer Woman as a group of RSS feeds, and I want to look at all the items in that feed, I'll just touch it, and it'll take me to all the stories from the Pioneer Woman. If I click on one of them, again, touching it, it'll take me to an individual story, right? And what we want to do is integrate the navigation elements directly into the content and remove any Chrome that's associated with navigation, like tabs and the tree controls and stuff like that, and rededicate those pixels to the thing that your app is awesome at, right? In this case, it's news stories. So there's a couple of navigation patterns that are supported within Metro. The first is a hierarchical pattern, where you have a hub page that presents all the different categories of content that you might have that users can navigate into individual groups. And those individual groups support, you know, detail pages. Like, I have a news application. There's different groups of news stories, like politics and sports and so on. I can go into just technology and see all the technology items. I can see individual stories, right? So here's an example of that. I'm going to go into the news application, and let's just go to the home page. So this is the Bing news app, right? You can see here that I can scroll along the edge to see all the different stories that are here, right? And I can see different, here's the top story. So I've elevated a particular story to get this first, you know, this first piece of real estate within the app. I've got different groups that I can navigate into, like US News, right? I just click on that, that group header, right? And I can see just news stories about that. If I want to go into a particular news story, I just click on it, right? So rather than having all those tabs and those tree controls, I'm just navigating via the content, right? And if there's lots and lots of content, right? Like here you can see there's one, two, three, you know, three, four pans of content here that I'm horizontally scrolling through. If I want to make that easy to navigate, I can just pinch it down to do a semantic zoom and go directly, and this gives me a different view of the content here. I'm looking at the group level of the content now. And if I want to go directly to the health stories, I can just navigate directly there, right? And that's a very Metro way of supporting navigation, right? Is through this hierarchical pattern and making the content itself a navigation element, right? I see something, I'm interested in it, I touch it, I navigate there. It's so easy to go back just via the back button, right? So it's easy to navigate into the content and then back, okay? So here's an example of this. What I've done is I took an example, Contoso Travel, and I laid out what the hub is and what the various spoke and details are. So you can kind of see the relationship between how you would structure your content to make it easy to navigate. So here you can see on the hub page, I have featured destinations, last-minute deals, my trips, and city guide, just like I might have, you know, groups of photos or groups of news stories. If I click on a heading like featured destinations, it would take me to that spoke page for featured destinations that I could pan through and see all the content that's in that particular spoke. If I wanted to go in to see just a particular featured destination like Barcelona, I would touch that content and I would navigate there. Very, very clean, very, very easy to navigate. With the persistent back button in the upper left-hand corner, it's very easy to go into a story and go back, and it makes the content very discoverable. Okay? And we had talked about the fact that the content is horizontally panelable, so I don't have to worry about having a whole bunch of tabs or a tree control and take up pixels that I could normally use for that content that my users love. I can make it horizontally panelable, and this is supported within the controls within the platform. So it's very easy to create a great touch experience where I can just pan through the content, right? And if I want to make that content easier to consume. If I've got lots and lots of pictures and lots of news stories or lots and lots of music, I can just use semantic zoom and then pinch down, and I can get these different representations of the content. So it's very easy for me to go right to the technology stories, or right to this genre of music, or right to the pictures from that vacation. Okay? So when I'm working with companies and we kind of start doing these design reviews, here's a couple of things that I see quite often where folks will, you know, we're really used to these tree controls, we're really used to tabs. They'll take up, they'll put essentially some navigation links on the side, essentially replicating that tree control that we're all so comfortable with. Again, this is Chrome. If you look at all of that blank space that's over on the left-hand side that I could use for the content that this travel app is presenting, I'm losing a lot of real estate there, right? I should just make those individual featured last-minute deals in my trips just headings and make those navigable themselves, make the content navigation enabled, right? And same thing with tabs, right? These are hard habits to break, but once you get through the design process a couple of times, you'll learn to love this navigation pattern where rather than making those tabs, I can just make the content scrollable and give it group headings and maybe support semantic zoom to navigate large bodies of data. So the other navigation pattern is the flat pattern, and we actually see a great example of this in IE. So if you go into the touch version of IE, you can see here that I'm, you know, looking at, you know, various content here. If I want to navigate amongst different tabs, in a navigation pattern, they're hierarchically arranged. There's a relationship within the data. With the flat pattern, it's really about switching. And there's different elements of this pattern. One is the different tiles in the nav bar to represent the different pages I might be looking at, right? And I can just grab the nav bar and go to different pages. If I want to get rid of one, I just click on the close button. If I want to create a new one, I get a new tab, and then I can type in the address and hit go. And it'll navigate there, and it's just easy to switch, right? This pattern is all about just fast switching between different content items. Okay. Now, a lot of the Chrome that we had seen in that news story app was about interacting with the content, right? And what we want to do is we want to, in a metro design, we want to build that integration into the content itself, right? So we can free up more of those pixels for the content, that thing that your app is totally awesome at, right? So a lot of design reviews, I'll see something along these lines, where there will be a icon on the content for going into the story or going into the group. Right? We can eliminate those and just make the individual tiles of content navigation items themselves. And you saw that in a news story. I saw a news story I was interested in. I can just touch it, right? And it'll take me right to that particular detail page for that news story. Another way that we can build interaction into our apps is to leverage the edge. So when you look at a lot of different items that are on this particular RSS reader, like settings, the search bar, the refresh button, and so on, where does that functionality go in a Metro UI? Well, they can move to what's called an app bar or the charms bar. Now, the app bar is a UI element that lives just underneath the bottom of the screen, right? And if I wanted to add a feed or do a refresh, rather than having those buttons on the screen all the time, taking up pixels away from my content or away from what my app is good at, I can put them in the app bar. And just with a swipe from the bottom, I can access that app bar, right? So if I go into even just the start screen, I swipe up from the bottom, there's an app bar that takes me to being able to see all the apps on my system, right? And if I go back into my application and I want to get to that search feature, well, search is actually a first-class citizen of every Windows 8 experience, right? So it lives on this charm bar, again, which is just off the edge. You swipe your thumb from the side. You can also do Windows C. The app bar comes up with Windows Z. I can get access to the search feature, the share feature, devices and settings, right? Or go directly to the start bar, right? Again, that frees up more pixels for my app and my content, right? And if you go to the start screen or any application, again, you can just pull that out from the side. It just lives on the side there. So I can access any of these features. We'll talk about building these features later in the talk. Okay? And same thing we saw in IE. There's a navigation bar that lives with this app. I've got, you know, when I'm using the app full screen, I've got every single pixel dedicated to that page that I'm viewing. If I want to navigate, I just swipe from the top, and you saw me do that when I was using the application earlier, showing you that navigation scheme. I can just swipe from the top. The app bar is there. I can add new tabs. I can close tabs. I can navigate to different tabs. Again, freeing up more of these pixels for your app's content. Okay? We can also provide commands contextually, right? So if I bring up the app bar and I don't have anything selected in the UI, it brings up the global commands. If I cross swipe, oops. Here, I'll just show this to you on the start screen. So here's the app bar for the Windows start screen itself. You can see it has one icon down at the bottom, just showing me all apps. Right? If I go in and select an item by cross swiping, and we'll talk about it in the touch interaction, but if I'm doing vertical panning and I want to select something, I can just cross swipe it and it'll select it. You can see the little check mark there. The app bar comes up and shows me things, app bar icons that are contextual to having that thing selected, like being able to unpin it from start, uninstall it, make the icon smaller, or turn off the live tile. Right? And you can do that very easily in your applications. You put global icons either on the right edge or on the left edge, and contextual ones to the inside of that. So the global ones are always anchored to the edge of the app bar. They're always there and consistent to give your users confidence in the fact that they know what features are going to be there. And then when you select things, you can start adding those in. So for the lesser used or contextual app bar buttons, they know that they'll be able to find them just to the inside of those global buttons. And again, the resources that I've provided at the end of this talk provide very great guidance on how to design these app bars to make them very easy to use, whether you're using a mouse, a keyboard, or touch, whether you're sitting at a desk or you're roaming around with a device. Okay? So the second principle is pride and craftsmanship. So I know what my app is good at. I've really zeroed in on the right scenarios. I've got awesome content, and I'm using every single pixel of the screen. I've dedicated it to that content. But how do I arrange it to make it very, very easy to see how content is related, different groups are related to each other, how are things within a group related to each other? How can I make the structure of that app very easy to consume so users know, you know, these stories are related to each other, this is a different group of stories, when I'm in a story, how is the information structured? Well, I can do that in a couple of different elements. One is, how do I arrange the content on the screen? And then how do I use typography, clear typography, to make it very easy to see the structure or the relationships between different content items, or even content within an item. So the first thing I want to talk about is the Windows 8 silhouette. So here's our RSS reader again. We talked about layout in that Chrome, when we were talking about Chrome, and you know, you see a lot of different lines here that kind of structure and separate the content. You know, and if you remove them, the app kind of opens up a little bit, right? You can see the content a little bit better. We want to take this to the next level and really start thinking about how we can use the content itself to structure and show relationships. And we do that via a grid, right? This clean, straightforward, readable grid gives us a way to present the content in such a way where we can use size and position and relationship, positive and negative space, so it's very easy to see the content and how it's related to each other. We can also use size and proportion to kind of show importance, that this story is much more important than these other 10. Right? This is the top leading story right now. So let's talk about this grid. When you go through the design guidance, it'll talk about the importance of this grid relative to touch and relative to working with different screen sizes. So when I show you this and I show you that, you know, a unit on this grid is 20 pixels by 20 pixels, you might be thinking, okay, now you're getting kind of crazy when you're talking down to the pixel level. But really, for a quality application that works great with touch and looks beautiful regardless of the screen size, regardless of the resolution, you really do need to think about how you're going to arrange that content down to the very pixel. And the design guidance, as well as the tools and the controls that are built into the platform, make that really easy to do. But you do need to do a little work up front to think about, you know, how is my content going to be structured? So we have a unit which is 20 pixels by 20 pixels. And again, this is important based on DPI and resolution of different screens. A subunit is 5 pixels. And a column, when we use to separate content, is 80 pixels. And when you start looking at content arranged on that grid, you can start to see relationships in the layout, right? So the first thing you'll notice is that every application in Metro has a page header, and that's 5 units from the top. It has a baseline where the application name or the application brand will sit, right? It's consistent in all the apps, so as you're flipping between apps or loading different apps, that always shows up in the same place, so your eye automatically goes there and you know which app you're looking at, right? It has a consistent margin, so when you start looking at the content for an application, your eye will automatically go to that pixel and you'll see exactly where the content will start. Incidentally, that upper corner, that upper left-hand corner, is the most important real estate that you'll have in your app because it's what everyone sees first, so you should use it wisely to support that best at statement. And if you look at these past couple slides, you can see that there's, you know, tiles of information here. I just have placeholders, these gray boxes. But you can see they're arranged in a bunch of different ways. This grid, you can think about it as a skeleton of your app, right? Just like everybody in this room has a skeleton, right? But you and I look very, very differently. We all have a common structure, right? But we're all unique in the way that we, in the people that we are. And the same thing for your app. You'll have this structure within your application. Use it however you feel best, is best suited to that thing that your app is great at and the way that you arrange that content to immerse people in that thing that they love about your app, pictures, news, music. When I'm arranging the content, I can show relationships between content just by using margins between the tiles or between the content, right? So I'll use 2 subunits or 10 pixels to show that these things are together. Right? I'll use 1 column or 80 pixels to say that these things are 2 different groups, right? They're different. And I kind of use the cocktail party rule, right? When I think about this. So as a mental image, you go to a cocktail party and everybody's standing around, you know, having a drink or a snack and they're talking with each other. You can tell who are the people that are together or a couple versus who are just a bunch of friends because the friends will be evenly distributed. But the people that are a couple will generally stand closer to each other, right? I was thinking about that the other night when I was at a party relative to this particular example, that the things that are closer together are together. The things that are separate or evenly distributed, those things are different, right? And we use this grid to kind of show that relationship. I could see the difference between the technology stories and the entertainment stories versus the stories within one of those groups just by the way that they were arranged, right? And if you look at that, let's go back to the top page, just in news, for example. Right? See that column between, news between US and the world? I can see the difference in the layout between the stories that are all in US versus the ones in the world. And it's just that negative space tells me that. Right? You'll be doing that within your applications as well. I can also use size and proportion to show relationship or differences in the data. So I can make one story very, very large to say this is my top story, right, relative to the size of others. I can also use the upper left-hand pixels and how far away you are from those upper left-hand pixels to show, or to use position to show the importance of an individual item. Right? So just like in real estate, it's location, location, location. When people launch your app, that upper left-hand corner is going to be the first thing that they see. Use that wisely. Make sure it's something that grabs them, right? Grabs their attention. And that together, that header, that margin, that content area creates a silhouette that all apps will share. And it's a sense of quality amongst the different apps. In fact, we thought it was so important that we built it into the templates within Visual Studio and with an expression, right? So that header and that content area always shows up in the same place. And the next element that I can use in order to structure and show relationships within my app is typography. So I can use very, very clean and crisp fonts, the size and the weight of those fonts to show relationships between data. So again, taken from the design guidance that we've built into the design tools as well as into Visual Studio, I can show the relationship between headers, subheaders, small subheaders, navigation, and body copy just by changing the size of the font and the weight of the font. So here's a page. Even though this is just gibberish, right? This is just placeholder text, I can see the relationship between the title, the subtitle, individual item titles, and their body text just by using a different font, right? And we've got these type ramps defined within the design guidance. All of the design guidance that you'll see from us is in Sago UI, and I often get the question, hey, can I use something other than Sago? Of course you can. Use whatever best reflects your application, your brand, supports that best at statement. But just make sure that it uses that very clear and concise type ramp, because it does go a long way to show the relationship between different items within your content. And we saw that in the news story. There was a certain size font for headers versus titles. And when you go into a particular group and go into a particular story, the title of the or the title of the news story versus the body text is different to show you that relationship. Okay? So next, let's talk about being fast and fluid. We're talking about a touch-centric mobile UI or mobile operating system. Touch, though it's built into the platform and it makes it very easy for you to build a touch UI that works great whether you're using touch or you're using the mouse or you're using the keyboard, you do need to think about the fact that fingers and touch is very different from the mouse. The mouse is very precise and it's very easy to touch or to click on something at the pixel level versus fingers come in different sizes and they move in different ways and they're not exactly precise, right? You don't have like a point on the end of your finger. So designing for touch is going to create a great experience. And the things that you need to think about are postures and ergonomics, providing feedback so people know when they're touching something what exactly it's doing. Like when I was doing a cross swipe, you notice they gave you a little instant feedback. The tile kind of moved down a little bit to show that it was being selected. And make it really easy to interact with the content in such a way that it's easy to explore via touch. Now, the Metro has defined a number of gestures that define what we call a touch language. And you can use these gestures in your app. They're built into the controls that come with the platform, so they're easy to implement. But you need to think about them when you're building that navigation into your UI. So the first gesture is just tap, like you saw me tap on a story, right, to select it. Tap and hold to show a tooltip or to show a flyout for more details. So a way of learning more about a particular item. The panning, being able to pan back and forth between content. Cross swiping to select something. Being able to rotate content by using two fingers and rotating it a certain number of degrees. Pan and zoom just by pinching, right? And using that edge to bring up the app bar, bring in the charms bar. This is the touch language of Metro. And the great thing about this as part of these principles for being fast and fluid is that once a user spends a few hours with Windows 8 and starts kind of navigating around and using Metro, they understand these gestures. And when you build them into your app, they're automatically going to speak the touch language of your app. Right? So if you design for these, they're automatically going to be comfortable with your application. And all of these touch gestures are built into the controls within Visual Studio and within the platform, so they're automatically baked in. If you're building your own control and want to build in these touch gestures, we provide the primitives and all that, so you can definitely do that. But just out of the box, this is what users will know, and this is what's built into the platform. Now, when we get back to the grid and creating this content, I want to make that content touchable. And I want to make sure that people have a great touch experience. So we actually did a lot of research and collected, actually purchased a lot of data from the US government on the size of various people's fingers. So we could provide you guidance at the pixel level on how big things should be. What's the minimum size that you could make something that people would be able to touch on it successfully? Again, because fingers are not all that precise. Turns out that the average width of an index finger of a human being is 11 millimeters. Right? And we did some studies to show how big something would be before it started to get to the point where you were kind of falling off the map as far as being able to touch that target and hit it successfully. And it turns out that if you make something a minimum size, the content that people are going to touch on, to be 9 millimeters by 9 millimeters, they will be able to touch that successfully and take the action that they wanted to take one out of every 200 times, so about 0.5%. And this is really, for a touch UI, even anything less than this doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like a quality application. So you'll see in the touch guidance, we actually tell you exactly how big to make touchable areas and how much padding to put between them to make sure that you're on the right-hand side of that graph where you're getting a great touch experience and people are touching things and it's just seamlessly moving them around through the navigation of that content in your app. You also need to think about ergonomics. People are going to be holding, you know, screens, 10-inch screens like those slates we saw at Build and the ones that you see down on the floor at Tech Ed. They're going to be holding them, right? So you need to think about where you're placing things to put them in an area that they would actually be able to touch them in a comfortable way. Again, this is a study that we did, bringing in a bunch of different test subjects. You can see the area of the green is where everyone in the study could actually touch the screen if they were holding it like this, right? The yellow was a little bit harder, a little bit less accurate, and then the red area was something that, you know, was really hard for people to reach. And again, in the Metro principles and the guidance that we give you, we provide guidance on what are great interaction areas within the content. So if I'm interacting or I'm touching something on the screen, if I put something in the white area, it's very, very easy to reach if I'm holding an app like this in landscape mode. If I'm holding it in portrait, I turn it like this, it's in the center. The gray area is pretty good. The dark gray area is a little bit harder because that's when people either run out of room or run out of range with their thumbs and have to take their hand off the device. So something to think about as you start arranging the content on the UI. And same thing with reading. We did studies and it turns out that the upper half of a portrait or a landscape screen and the upper half of a portrait screen is the best for reading, right? Because people's hands are going to be down here. Right? So again, there's a good, there's a better, and there's a best area to arrange the content to make it great for ergonomics and reading. And finally, the thing that you need to think about in your UI is what does your app do and how are people going to use it? And pretty early in design processes and doing some prototyping and stuff like that, I'll start using the app, the team will start using the app, and we'll learn a lot about ergonomics of the app. You know, if it's just a content consumption app, people may be just holding it with one hand and just touching things, right, to navigate through the application and go to the back button and so on. If it has a little bit of data entry, maybe they're using the touch keyboard, the one that supports just your thumbs, the one that looks or works a lot like, you know, a mobile phone. If it's a lot of data entry, maybe they're going to be setting that on their lap, and they're going to be using the full touch keyboard and actually touch typing on the slate. So think about that when you're designing your UI, because it'll change where you want to position the elements. And again, we have great guidance on this within the Metro design guidance I've linked at the back. Okay, the other thing that you need to think about as far as being fast and fluid is making sure that regardless of how the user holds the UI, whether it's landscape or portrait, whether you're in full screen or you're being snapped or you're in film mode, that your app looks fantastic. Right? People love your content. You've spent a lot of time creating great content and arranging it on the screen. You want to make sure that that content looks great, regardless of whether you're on a 10-inch slate, an 11-inch slate, maybe in a 13-inch laptop, or a 20-inch monitor on a desktop, or even a 30-inch monitor. Right? And this is, again, where the grid and proportion and size and padding comes into play. Because if you look at all these examples that I showed, here I was showing two rows of content and five columns, right? the controls that are built into the platform automatically do dynamic layout, right? So you can do things like start to show more content, right? So here I'm showing three rows. Here I'm showing three rows, but I'm showing more columns, and so on. And maybe in one element or in one state for very large monitors, maybe I want to show larger images. I want to show not only more content, but larger, more detail of the content. And I can do that with view state management in XAML or media queries within HTML. So it's something you need to think about in your design. Again, it's built into the platform. You just need to make sure that you're arranging the content in such a way that makes sense and it will flow well. Same thing with orientation, whether I'm in landscape mode or they're turning it into portrait mode. I want to make sure my app looks awesome either way. I also want to think about different views. So whether my app is in full screen mode or snapped mode, right? So if I'm in, you know, Internet Explorer and I want someone to come in and snap an application, like let's get back to Internet Explorer, and then here's the news app. Right, you notice that it automatically reformats itself, right, to show that same content in a different way, right, still providing all the navigation and so on, right, and flowing vertically rather than horizontally, so it'll work great in snapped mode, right? And why do I want to do that? Well, if I don't work well in snap mode and someone puts my app in snap mode, they're going to have a bad experience, and they're going to probably start looking for another app to do, you know, news reading, because maybe they want to watch TV or browse the web. Yeah, watch TV or watch a movie while they're browsing news stories, or do email and watch TV at the same time. You know, people multitask, and Snap and Scale was built for that. Just like I want to be able to be a great provide a great UI when I'm in a filled state, right? Again, my screen's going to be a little bit smaller because some of the area is going to be taken up for Snap, so I want to account for that in my design. And again, that's where the grid comes in handy. Okay, next I want to talk about motion. So here's probably the best example I could give. So you think about that charms bar or the app bar or the keyboard, and think about how they appear on the screen, right? They don't just appear. Right? Because if they just appear, that doesn't really tell you anything. Right? And you can give people a message by using animation. And we actually use animation throughout Windows 8. And let me give you the best example I could give you. Now watch what happens when the screen when I hit the start button. Now notice how the start icons come into the screen. They fill in from the left to the right. And that tells the user that, by the way, there's more content over here. Right? Just like when I get to the end, there's a little animation to say, hey, you're at the end. It kind of bumps. Right? Just like the charms bar doesn't just appear, it slides in from the side. Right? And that slide in tells users, oh, by the way, the charms bar is just over here. So whenever you need it, don't worry. It's just right there. Just slide in from the edge of the screen or do Windows C, and you'll get to the charms bar, just like the app bar is right there, or just like the keyboard comes up from the bottom. Let me get rid of this guy. All right, the keyboard comes up from the bottom to tell you that the keyboard is just right there, right, underneath the screen. And you can swipe it up like the app bar or just touch on something and it'll appear. All right? And that animation communicates something to your users, and it's purposeful. And again, within the design guidance, we show you exactly what all the different animations are for something appearing from the edge, for populating tiles within a grid, and so on. All these animations are built into the intrinsic controls that are part of the platform. So the list view automatically does that fill-in, right, of the content to animate your content. But when you're building your own controls or you're building a UI out of the base controls, like text boxes and radio controls and buttons and so on, we give you an animation library that you can just sit there and declaratively say, okay, I want this screen to have an entrance animation, and I want it to animate like this. Because again, it's a great way to communicate something to your users about your UI. Hey, there's more content, or this thing is just off the screen, and you can swipe to grab it, those things. Okay? Let's talk about being authentically digital. All right, so we have pixels on the screen, And that's what we have to work with. So we want to take those pixels and we want to dedicate every single one of them as humanly possible to that content and that thing that my app is great at. And we want to remove distractions, right? I see a lot of applications that, you know, people try and make the background look like wood or brushed metal or make elements of the UI look like it's transparent glass, right? That's a distraction away from the thing that your user bought your app for, right? Content, the features. So what we want to do wherever possible is remove those faux digital features as much as possible to make the content really shine, and only use digital paradigms where it adds something to that particular feature set or that particular best at statement. So here's probably the best example that I can give as something that really adds something to an app by moving away from a physical metaphor and using a digital metaphor. So here's a grid full of content, like sci-fi books, you know, in different groups like adventure and anthology. And if I were to zoom in with this in the camera, the things would get closer, but they would stay the same. They would just be a zoomed in view. If I zoom into this using semantic zoom, I can actually take that same data and show it in a different way. And we saw that in the news app. We're seeing it here, where I could rearrange that content to show that not only are there different groups, showing all the groups at once through semantic zoom, like adventure, anthologies, high tech, history and criticism, and short stories, as far as the different sci-fi books, but I can show here their popularity, right? Just by showing that icon, right, that represents the group in a different size. Maybe I could show how many different books are within there, right? Or show how popular are, you know, using color. It's a design element that you should use to provide something beyond what you could normally provide in the physical medium, right? Just like sorting is another great example. You think about the back in the old days when you had CDs, if you wanted to organize everything alphabetically versus if you had to organize something by genre, you'd have to take all your CDs and spread them out and start arranging them, right? You'd never do that. You picked one of them, either by genre or by alphabetical, or if you were really, really picky, you'd do both, right? But you'd leave it in that one medium. But it's so easy within a Metro application to just touch the navigation header and pick different filters and pick different sorts. You should do that and make it easy for people to find exactly the content they want to work with or use that day or consume that day. Okay. We also want to be very, very clear with our infographics and our glyphs. So in the past few years, in the past few different versions of Metro or of Windows, we've worked really hard to make these icons 3D and make them transparent and make them look like the light shining in from the upper left-hand corner and so on. And really, I mean, over the time, they've gotten more detailed, right? But they really haven't added anything to the application. And what we want to do with Metro is just take that icon that represents, you know, navigation or adding something or marking something as a favorite or making a comment, and make it as clear and concise and consistent as possible. These icons are built into the platform, right? And using them on their app bars, again, is going to make it very, very easy for a user to use your app because they've been in other applications and they know that the heart icon is the one for marking something as a favorite. When they bring up the app bar to see what they can do with a particular piece of content, they're going to see that and they're automatically going to think favorites, right? And you can create your own, of course, for if you have a unique scenario. But there's tons and tons of these icons that are built into the platform. They're very, very crisp. They're very, very clear. They scale across all different kinds of screen sizes. And you can use them within your application to provide very, very clear commands within the app bar. Again, they're going to be consistent across apps. Once your user spends a little time with Windows 8, they're going to know them. When they use them in your app, they're going to know your app better. Okay, finally, the last principle I want to talk about is winning as one. And we had talked about airports and subway stations early in the talk. And we talked about the fact that you could go to an airport in a city that you've never been to before, and you could catch your next flight. And why is that? Well, there's a consistent model, right, for airports. Every airport is unique, and every city is different. But you know how to get there because there's some consistency. And we wanted to do the same thing with Metro, right? We wanted to make it very, very easy for you to understand how to search in a Metro UI, how to share things, where are you going to find settings within an app, And probably the best way to do that is just to show a couple of examples, right? So if I'm in, let's do a share. So I'm in Internet Explorer, and I want to share this design guidance with you to make sure that you understand all these principles and you can put them into practice when you go design your first Metro UI. So if I want to share this, I'm just going to grab the charms bar from the side, and I'm going to click Share. Now, this is going to bring up all the applications on my PC that support the share target contract, that support this data that I'm trying to share, whether that's mail, right? And it's going to load a preview here for me. It's going to give it a title, right? And I can pick different pictures to show. Right, or that's the People app where I could share it through Facebook. Right, and so when I talk about winning as one, think about these gestures. People are going to be using Windows 8. When the first couple of hours, they're going to search on something, they're going to share on something, they're going to understand this paradigm. If you build this into your application, and your app shows up in this list, it's going to result in an app launch. People are going to see your app and go, oh, yeah, I want to share it via, you know, app XYZ. Or if I'm going to do a search for something, like let's go to the music application, right, and I want to do a search, I always know that the search feature is right here. And any search that I do within this app, right, I can do is going to be an in-app search. But if I wanted to search, you know, like Italy, right, maybe I get different Italian artists and so on if I'm in the music app. If I want to try it doing a search in a different app, I click on that, it launches the application, and that very core Windows experience of search is automatically built into my application. Right? Same thing with another great example is in the mail app. If I want to add an attachment to a new email, I click attachments. This loads the file open picker. Right? And this UI up at the top is actually, this UI up at the top and at the bottom is actually Windows. If I were to pick an application, like the Photos app, or the SkyDrive app, or this Contoso cookbook app, or the camera app, it would actually bring and launch my application and bring in a screen where people could pick things like photos, or recipes, or news stories from my app. Right? And by implementing these contracts and building these experiences into your app, not only does it make it make your app part of the Windows experience, but it also results in more launches and more usage of your application. Just like in the start screen, if I implement a live tile rather than just a static tile, like you can see these tiles changing and moving, right? If I implement a live tile or being able to pin an application to the start screen or doing notifications that come up at the top to let people know that there's a new photo, or their friend just shared something, or they just got a text message. If I implement this experience that's very, very core to the Windows 8 experience or to Metro applications, that's going to result in more launches of my application, more use of my application, more people thinking, you know what, this app is the best app at doing, you know, fill in the blank, whatever we decided our app was going to be the best at. And they're going to download it more. They're going to tell their friends. You're going to get a higher rating. Your app's going to be really, really successful. So when we talk about a consistent UI model, there is that consistent touch experience. There is those touch gestures, the idea of panning, and so on, that all apps are going to share amongst their designs, even though each app is unique. And then there's this concept of the contracts, like search and share and settings and file picker, that your users are just going to expect, right? Build them into your application and make it a great feature. It's going to result in your app being used more, used by more people, and rated higher within the store. So people download it more, and it's this virtual cycle of your app just being awesome, right? So those are the Metro design principles. Again, these are principles that we put together to help you understand what is a great Metro or Windows 8 app. And then we've built all of the platform and all of the design guidance and all of the developer tools to support this, to make it as easy as possible for you to say, this is what my app is going to be the best at. This is the content that I'm going to build. right? Build into that. This is how I'm going to lay it out in the application. This is how I'm going to support touch. This is how I'm going to be authentically digital so my app is clear and concise and easy to use and easy to navigate. And then I've got all these different contracts built in so my app feels like it's part of Windows 8, even though it's unique in what it does. We wanted to align everything around these principles, the UX guidance, the tools, the platform, the controls, to make it as easy as possible for you to say, my app is going to be the best app in the world at this, and for you to implement that on Windows 8 in Metro. So think about doing more with less. So centering around that scenario, thinking about that content and immersing your users in it, and removing everything else that distracts from that. Pride and craftsmanship as far as organization and structure. So how do I align things on the grid to show relationships? How do I use typography to show a hierarchy or relationship between data? How do I create a great touch experience so it's very easy for me to navigate back and forth within that content? How do I present it clearly and concisely in an authentically digital way? And then how do I integrate with Windows, winning as one, through search and share and file picker and so on? And that is how Metro and these design principles will help you design a great Metro app to put up in the store. Awesome number of downloads, great rating. And your users are super, super happy, and you're super, super successful. So thank you. Thanks very much. So we've got about 8 minutes left for questions. If you guys want to bring questions up here on the mic, I put two links here that I thought were worthwhile. One was design.windows.com, which is the link that you can go to get very, very fine-grained, detailed UX and design guidance on building Metro UIs and user experiences. And then dev.windows.com is, of course, the developer center. And once you have that design, you can sit down, you know, with your dev team, or if you're the dev team, you can sit down with a designer and be able to see the tie between what you're designing and how you're going to develop it. Because a lot of that stuff, again, was built into the design principles and then built into the platform to support it. So if you have any questions, please come up here on the mic. Otherwise, have a great tech ed. Have a great week. And I can't wait to see your app up in the Windows Store. Thanks, guys. And if you guys don't want to take questions on the mic, I'm happy to take them up here off the mic as well, whatever you feel comfortable with. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a quick question
about
enterprise development. This looks like it's very great at attacking the app store that Apple's putting out and all the mini apps. But I'm not getting that sense of, I'm not building an app to do one thing great. I'm doing many things inside my app to do a lot of things, hopefully decent. But I'm not seeing that sort of connection.
You know, I actually, and so the question was, hey, this looks great for consumer-based apps that I would put in a store. And I'm paraphrasing here, and let me know if I don't get it right.
Got it.
But what about line of business applications? You know, large, complex, a line of business or enterprise applications. Does Metro apply to that? Can I do that? Actually, I do a lot of enterprise app design with our customers to help them design their applications to put them in the store and to fit and work well within the Metro world. And really what we do is when we start the design process, you know, we might say, you know, my app is going to be the best in the world at X, right? And if X gets to be the point where we've got so many different scenarios and so many different features that they start to feel like different applications.
Different constituencies.
We'll start breaking them up into different apps that are absolutely fantastic and absolutely awesome at doing that one thing, but they belong in a suite of applications, right? That are going to work together. Like, you know, one is for doing like expense reports, and the other one is doing, you know, managing financials, and one is doing, you know, dashboards and reports and stuff like that. And we'll break them up and we'll make them into a suite. And that's worked really, really well. So go through that design process and think about that best at statement and think about the features. It'll naturally, as you start immersing yourself in that process.
Call those modules now,
It'll tell you, right? The design will tell you. Yeah, but great question. We do it all the time and it's worked really, really well.
So we've invested, or our company has invested, a lot of time in, you know, the design of the app as it is, which is completely antithetical to everything you've just shown us.
It's completely what?
Antithetical, right? I mean, they've got really great icons that are, you know, exact photocopies of what you want to see, not mm-hmm. symbols. They got all the lines and all this layout. So if I go back and say, hey, so here's the new thing from Microsoft, and this is how they think we should develop apps now, I mean, they're going to pretty much just, say, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
And so I guess, the question is, I mean, a little bit of that's political, right? But we're not the ones making these design decisions. And we don't, I mean, basically it's the users telling us this is what we want, yada, yada, yada. But the second thing is, I guess, this is your design philosophy going forward. What Windows 8 is going to look like, how is that going to apply to, a lot of still have apps that are going to be out there on, previous
right.
systems. So are we looking at now, if we want to be competitive and create a user experience that users want, are we going to need to create two versions of our UI, the one that we spent all this money designing, and then, if we want to stay competitive, create one that these design principles, or are we just going to go shoehorn what we've got into Windows 8 as long as we can make it work? Or, these are the kinds of things that this comes up, and this is exactly what, when I go back and talk to them, they're going to be asking me. They're going to tell me where to get off.
So those are all awesome questions. So the first question, and I'm paraphrasing here, if I get it wrong, throw something, or just maybe tell me it'd be better, whatever. But the first question was, hey, we've got a big investment in these existing desktop applications that we worked really, really hard on, and we'll talk about the design elements in a second. But, are those going to run on Windows 8? And of course, Windows 8 supports not only Metro, but also all desktop applications, right? So I still have the desktop here. You can see all my desktop apps here down at the bottom, and I can run them like PowerPoint and Zoom and all of those things. So your app, if it runs on Windows 7, it's still going to run on Windows 8. So that being said, your second question was, now I've put all this work into the design of my desktop application, right? And there's a huge investment there, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I'm interested in Metro, and I'm interested in being part of this Windows 8 wave and all this excitement and so on. So how do I do that, right? Well, what I've done, again, I mentioned the fact that I've done a lot of work with enterprise apps and line of business apps from different companies. Actually, what we've done is we've looked for the best opportunities within their suite of applications for creating a mobile and touch UI. Even though, with Metro you get, touch, it's a touch-first platform, you can still use the mouse and the keyboard, but we're really looking for what's a great scenario or a best at statement that we could write for a Metro application to complement these existing desktop applications. What's something that you couldn't do before because you couldn't be mobile, right? You couldn't, desktop UIs are not great touch UIs and so on. And honestly, we've gone through the process of designing that app and doing a prototype and gone back and showed that to stakeholders. And they've been really, really pleasantly surprised because they can reuse all the stuff that they already have today. It's still valuable. They're still selling it. It's still awesome. But now they have this new capability. And in a lot of cases, reusing a lot of the back-end systems like, REST services or WCF services or whatever, and just presenting it in this beautiful content-rich UI and making it a touch mobile application, and they see more opportunities rather than less opportunities. Like, you're not taking something away, you're added something. And that's worked really, really well. I would try that because it's... I wouldn't say 100% of the time, but it's in the high 90s. That's worked really, really well for the line of business apps I've worked with.
Okay, and just as this is real quick, but
yeah.
I guess if I go back and I was to give them this presentation, the first thing I think that they would say is, okay, in our current app, it's very clear to users how to use this stuff. Here you're making all kinds of assumptions about what the users do and don't know. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is they're going to know this from having used the Windows 8 paradigm for a while, but they're not going to see that. They're going to be like, well, how are they going to know how to search, or how are they going to know how to do this stuff? Right now, our application's easy because the buttons are there, and we're
right.
telling them, no, that's all wrong.
Right.
It's kind of hard to sell them that, now the new Microsoft way is the right way.
Show it to them. It's a compelling experience. So the question was, right now, my search bar is at the top of the page. I have to go back, and I need to convince them that, the Windows 8 way is intuitive and easy, and it's going to be successful, right? You've seen the press around Windows 8, right, and around Metro. It's been really, really positive. And, honestly, a lot of times when we come out with something new, there's folks that like to bash it and like to say, it's not going to work and stuff like that. The response to Metro has been really, really well, really, really well received. And the reason why is because we took a lot of time to create a great, intuitive, touch-first, context-centric you know, designed and made it easy for you to implement, show it to them. I think once they see it and start using it, or even through a quick demo, I think they're going to see the opportunity, right? And when they start to learn that they can reuse a lot of their software assets today and reuse a lot of the skills that you already have, just applying it in a new way with Visual Studio 11 and this new design, I think they're going to see some value, right? There's lots of excitement around Windows 8. When people start using it, they're going to understand these gestures. They're going to expect them. It's easy for you to implement them. Yeah, show them. Yeah. Yeah, question.
Yep. Hello. First of all, thank you for a nice show.
Thank you. You're welcome.
The other gentleman before talked about using Metro in an enterprise level.
Yep.
For I'm working for an insurance company,
mm-hmm.
And it looks very compelling, and we could do this. But how do you see the physics around actually doing a kind of a user experience here? Should they have 20-inch touch screens mm-hmm. In the call center or whatever? And if they do that, is it because we do insurance, we often have to type a lot of text?
Right.
And that really maybe is not so good when you need a keyboard for that.
Uh-huh.
But if you have a keyboard, your screen is, you know, further away, so we have to do touch like this, or
right.
do we have
right.
to move it around? And have, you know, how's the physics going to work when you need both?
Yeah, that's an awesome question and an awesome point. So I'm going to paraphrase the scenario for everybody else, and then I'll talk about it. So the question was, okay, so I've got, let's say I create an insurance app, right? And sometimes the application is going to be used by someone in a call center who's going to have a headset, and they're going to be at a desktop with a 20-inch screen and a mouse and keyboard. And then sometimes the application's maybe going to be used on a mobile device that has a camera and people are going to be carrying it around, maybe doing adjustments or things along those lines, right? And I want a UI that's going to work awesome, whether I've got a 10-inch slate I'm holding like this and I'm touching like that, right, where it's maybe not super convenient for doing a lot of typing, or I want it to work really, really well when it's sitting on that desktop and the monitor's too far to touch and I'm just going to be using the mouse and keyboard. Well, one of the things that you need to keep in mind about Metro, and I apologize if I didn't make this clear, and you'll hear people from the Metro team and people from the Windows 8 team say this over and over and over again. Metro is a touch-first experience, but you also get the mouse and the keyboard for free, right? So everything that you saw me do with my finger, I can also do with the keyboard and with a mouse, right? And we built all of the controls and all of the gestures and stuff like that to work great for touch when it's a human being touching it with their finger, but also built in the keyboard and the mouse support. And I've actually done this in a lot of my designs where we've designed a single UI that worked great whether you were sitting there with a mouse and keyboard at the desktop, right? Or you were sitting there and using touch in a mobile environment. And it was really, really powerful. And I showed that in that screen where I could show, you know, more content and change the layout based on screen size, right? And also just by building the built-in controls, I get that touch experience that's awesome when it's mobile and people are running around or moving around. But also I can sit there with the mouse and keyboard and it works just as well. That's another thing. And for you, another great thing to show them. Show them the demo and show them the difference between being able to do that with when they're sitting at their desk or whether they're moving around mobile, and it's going to work either way, laptop, slate, desktop, small screen, large screen. It's super, super powerful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for the question.
No problem.
Cool. I'm getting the red flashing light, which tells me that I'm out of time and I need to let the next speaker come up here. So. I appreciate you guys coming to TechEd and coming to the talk, and I'll just grab my laptop and I'll meet you guys out there if you have any other questions about design or Metro or development in general.